jobless roles grow.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open. As trading begins for the day, we look at the broader economy. So let's check where things are right now. Where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now. The S&P up 0.5%, same for the NASDAQ. The Dow trading higher, about 26 points at 93.05. That's up about 0.25%. European markets up as well by an average of 1%, maybe 1.5%. And Asian shares closed mostly up today. We got word from the Labor Department this morning that new jobless claims went up by 15,000 last week. And the number of people continuing to claim those benefits was up a bit as well. Let's get some analysis this morning from Doug Foreman, who's Director of Equities at Highmark Capital. He joins us live from San Francisco. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So we keep seeing these numbers either stay steady or rise, yet I keep hearing the recovery has begun and the economy is getting back on its feet. Are the two mutually exclusive?
Well, long-term, they clearly are mutually exclusive. Businesses, you know, have been through a lot in this recession, and I think it's going to take a lot for them to, a lot of improvement that they need to see before they start to rehire. So this number this morning is disappointing, but, you know, not a disaster.
The White House today, Doug, said that the federal deficit will likely not be as bad as feared. Only 1.58 trillion, a record to be sure, yet that's more than 260 billion less than what was projected because Wall Street didn't need more help from the government. What does such a massive deficit do to an economy?
Well, long term, it's not a good thing. Obviously, it means that we have to borrow a lot of money from our trading partners abroad and help finance the deficits, and is something that obviously you don't want to keep borrowing money forever long-term at the government or household level. So we're in a point right now, though, unfortunately, where government spending is needed to help restore some private sector confidence, and we just have to let that run its course for a little while.
All right. Doug Foreman joining us from San Francisco. Doug, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Government today said it'll be announcing plans in the next few days for how it plans to wind down cash for clunkers. But that doesn't mean consumer rebates are going away. Today's Wall Street Journal reports on a new kind of clunkers program, one that means if you're going appliance shopping, you might want to hold out till the fall. Marketplace's Elisa Roth has more.
Like the Cash for Clunkers program, this one will be part environmental, encouraging people to get rid of old, energy-sucking appliances, and one part economic, convincing people it's a good time to spend a big chunk of money. Congress set aside $300 million for this program as part of the economic stimulus package. You can get as much as $200 back for buying a new energy-efficient refrigerator or hot water heater or washing machine. Lane Burt is an energy policy analyst with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Most of these appliances actually pay back the extra cost that it takes to actually buy the more efficient appliance.
He says he hopes the program will target people who are going to buy a new appliance anyway, but who might not be able to afford a more expensive but more energy efficient model. Unlike Cash for Clunkers, you don't have to trade in an old machine to get the deal. You just have to buy one with an Energy Star rating, which means it meets the EPA and the Energy Department standards for efficiency. Congress is still distributing the money to states. Look for the program to be ready before the end of the year. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, August 20th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. New protections go into effect today under the Credit Card Accountability Act. It's the first installment in an overhaul of credit card rules to keep the companies that issue them from imposing exorbitant fees and jacking up rates with just the most limited notice to consumers. Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
Here's my Visa bill, and there's an $11 charge for not paying in full last month. It's due September 4th, so my bank is complying with one new rule. I get 21 days before they hit me with a late fee. Also, if they change the interest rate or fees, they have to give 45 days warning.
And not only that,
Pedro Morillas of the California Public Interest Research Group.
But if you say, I disagree with this increase in my interest rate, you have the option to cancel the card and set up a payment plan with them at the current rate.
Maria says another big change happens in February. That's when card companies have to alter how they calculate interest payments. They'll also have to limit rate increases.
They're not going to be able to change your interest rate because you're late on a payment to another credit card company.
These companies have already launched preemptive strikes on the new restrictions, hiking fees on things like cash advances, reducing credit limits, and canceling some cards altogether. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Military veterans heading to college are getting some help through the post-9/11 GI Bill, which kicked off this month. It provides more tuition assistance than the old bill, plus some housing and living expenses, too. But at least some veterans may not get that money in time for the start of the school year. Here's Marketplace's Rico Galliano.
The problem, a logjam of GI Bill applications at the Veterans Administration. How many? A widely reported number from the VA's website said it had over 200,000, quote, education work items pending. But a VA spokesman says only 9,000 of those are GI Bill related. Veterans groups don't seem worried, even if some tuition checks are delayed. Jerry Newberry is with the group Veterans of Foreign Wars.
It's our understanding that many campuses are going to bend over backward to assist the veteran.
That's the case at the University of California, Los Angeles. Nancy Coolidge is a coordinator of financial support there. She says the school already has contingency plans for hundreds of student vets.
Those individuals will be allowed to register for classes and enroll without actually producing money to pay their fees and tuition pending the arrival of their benefits from the Veterans Administration.
Of course, that means UCLA will have to temporarily do without that cash in its budget, which was already hit by the state's economic crisis. And Coolidge says she doesn't expect the VA's money to show up for a few months. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
A British telecom company has launched an unusual marketing team. It's employing a team of former pickpockets to get its message across. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
20 former pickpockets are roaming the streets of the capital, trying to put something back into society. Using all the tricks of the trade, they're surreptitiously slipping cash into unguarded pockets and handbags. The sums range up to £20 or $33. Not an entirely altruistic activity. Along with the cash, these artful dodgers deposit a card advertising the services of a telecom firm, the TalkTalk Company. It's giving away more than $150,000 during this promotional campaign. The put pockets, as they're called, are currently working the crowds in Leicester Square, Oxford Street and the Tube. They've been told to avoid the financial district in case they inadvertently give money to a banker. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Over in Japan, voters go to the polls in 10 days, and the Asahi newspaper there today predicts the opposition could take a whopping 300 of the 480 seats in parliament. Is it sayonara to the ruling party after 5 decades of control? Marketplace's Asia correspondent Scott Tong reports on what each camp is promising.
The big challenge facing both parties is getting people's attention, according to political observer Jeff Kingston, who teaches at Temple University in Tokyo. The other day he asked his Japanese neighbor if he cares about this race.
He just sort of rolled his eyes, smiled, and said, well, it's sort of like the difference between curry rice and rice curry.
Opposition challenger Yukio Hatoyama of the Democratic Party of Japan wants to shake things up and bounce the party that's ruled for 5 decades. This gives us the opportunity to change history, he says, and change the political leadership. The DPJ wants to cut taxes and school fees and boost domestic consumption. Many voters are yearning for something different after 2 decades of economic stagnation. Masaru Tamamoto in the port city of Yokohama is with the World Policy Institute.
The promise of lifetime employment is gone. Wages are much lower than before. What we're looking for is a new social contract.
The DPJ offers fresh blood, but it has its own problems. Its candidate for prime minister has a low approval rating, and lately a list of its political donors included the names of dead people. The incumbent prime minister, Taro Aso of the Liberal Democratic Party, says in trying economic times you need a party with experience.
The LDP will continue our policies to boost economic growth. Have you seen anything similar from the DPJ?
That message may get through to voters like this 41-year-old businessman in Tokyo.
I care about pension reform, workers' benefits, and solving our aging society issues. I will want to select the party that can deliver on these.
But the LDP's record is mixed. It ballooned the country's debt. Political scientist Jeff Kingston thinks it now wants to pass on a weak economy to its opponents.
The LDP, I guess, is banking on the fact that they're handing the poison chalice to the DPJ.
The ruling party trails by double digits in opinion polls, but lots of Japanese are undecided, and some analysts think the LDP could still pull off a political miracle. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
All right, let's ask the question, who's the most powerful woman in the world? No, you can't include your wife or your mother. Forbes says it's German Chancellor Angela Merkel again. At number two, it's Sheila Baer, the chairwoman of the FDIC. This year, Michelle Obama's on the list at number 40, ahead of Oprah and Queen Elizabeth. The list is determined by economic impact, media reach, and career accomplishments. Forbes didn't, however, gauge the ability to make you eat your vegetables or feel guilty about not coming home more often. Now that is some power. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Thursday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.